Chapter 37. He was hurting in 100 places. He wasn't at all sure how intact his bones were. One of his eyes was practically swollen shut. But he suspected he was going to survive. He sat leaning against the rock wall, waiting for the haze of pain to diminish a little. Sephara said, "We've got a little Jonglor brandy back at our headquarters. I can't authorize you to have some, I guess. For medicinal purposes, of course." "Brandy? Headquarters? What headquarters? What is this all about, Sephara? Are you really here at all? You think I'm a hallucination?" She laughed and dug her fingertips lightly into his forearm. "Is that a hallucination, would you say?" He winced. "Careful. I'm pretty tender there. And everywhere else right now. You just dropped right down out of the sky, is that it?" "I was on patrol duty, passing through the forest, and we heard the sounds of a scuffle. So we came to investigate. I had no idea you were mixed up in it until I saw you. We're trying to restore order around here somehow."
"We?"
"The fire patrol. It's as close as there is to a new local government. The headquarters is at the university sanctuary, and a man named Altenal, who used to be some sort of company executive, is in charge. I'm one of his officers. It's a vigilante group, really, which has managed to put across the notion that the use of fire must be controlled, and that only members of the fire patrol have the privilege of..." Theremin raised his hand.
"Hold on, Sephara. Slow down, will you? The university people in the sanctuary have formed a vigilante group, you say? They're going around putting out fires?
How can that be?
Sheeran told me that they had all cleared out, that they had gone south to some sort of rendezvous at Amgondo National Park."
"Sheeran? Is he here?"
"He was. He's on his way to Amgondo now. I decided to stick around here a little while longer."
It seemed impossible to tell her that he had stuck around on the unlikely chance that he would manage to find her. Sephara nodded. "What Sheeran told you was true. All the university people left the sanctuary the day after the eclipse. I suppose they're off in Amgondo by now. I haven't heard anything about them. They left the sanctuary wide open, and Altenal and his bunch wandered in and took possession of it. The fire patrol has 15-20 members, all of them in pretty good shape mentally. They've been able to establish their authority over about half the area of the forest, and some of the surrounding territory of the city where people are still living."
"And you?" Theremin asked. "How did you get involved with them?"
"I went into the forest first, once the stars were gone, but it looked pretty dangerous here, so when I remembered about the sanctuary, I headed there. Altenal and his people were already there. They invited me to join the patrol."
Sephara smiled in what might have been a rueful way.
"They didn't really offer me much of a choice," she said. "They aren't particularly gentle sorts."
"These aren't gentle times."
"No. So I decided, better off with them than drifting around on my own. They gave me this green neckerchief. Everybody around here respects it. And this needle gun. People respect that, too."
"So you're a vigilante," Theremin said, musing. "Somehow I never figured you for that kind of thing."
"I never did either."
"But you believe that this Altenal and his fire patrol are righteous folk who are helping to restore law and order. Is that it?"
She smiled again. And again, it was not an expression of mirth. "Righteous folk? They think they are, yes."
"You don't?"
A shrug. "They're out for themselves first, and no kidding about that. There's a power vacuum here, and they mean to fill it. But I suppose they're not the worst possible people to try to impose a governmental structure right now. They're easier to take than some of the outfits I can think of, at least."
"You mean the apostles? Are they trying to form a government, too?"
"Very likely they are, but I haven't heard anything about them since it all happened. Altenal thinks that they're still hidden away underground somewhere, or that Mondior has led them off to some place far out in the country where they'll set up their own kingdom. But we've got a couple of new fanatic groups that are real Lulus, Theremin. You just had a run-in with one of them, and it's only by wild luck that they didn't finish you off. They believe that the only salvation for humanity now is to give up the use of fire completely, since fire has been the ruin of the world. So they're going around destroying fire-making equipment wherever they can find it, and killing anyone who seems to enjoy starting fires."
"I was simply trying to cook some dinner for myself," said Theremin somberly.
Sephara said, "It's all the same to them whether you're cooking a meal or amusing yourself with a little bit of arson. Fire is fire, and they abhor it. Lucky thing for you that we came along in time. They accept the authority of the fire patrol. We're the elite, you understand. The only ones whose use of fire will be tolerated.
It helps to have needle guns, Theremin said. That gets you a lot of toleration, too.
He rubbed a sore place on his arm and looked off bleakly into the distance.
There are other fanatics besides these, you say?
There are the ones who think the university astronomers had discovered the secret of making the stars appear. They blame Athor, Binet, and company for everything that's happened. It's the old hatred of the intellectual that crops up whenever medieval emotions start surfacing.
Gods, are there many like that?
Enough. Darkness only knows what they'll do if they actually catch any university people who haven't already reached Amgondo safely. String them up to the nearest lamppost, I suppose.
Morosely, Theremin said, and I'd be responsible.
You?
Everything that's happened is my fault, Sephira. Not Athor's, not Foleman's, not the gods, but mine.
Mine. Me, Theremin 762.
That time you called me irresponsible, you were being too easy with me. I wasn't just irresponsible, I was criminally negligent.
Theremin, stop it. What's the good of...
He swept right on. I should have been writing columns day in and day out, warning of what was coming, crying out for a crash program to build shelters, to set aside provisions and emergency generating equipment, to provide counseling for the disturbed, to do a million different things. And instead, what did I do? Sneered. Poked fun at the astronomers in their lofty tower. Made it politically impossible for anybody in the government to take Athor seriously.
Theremin,
you should have let those crazies beat me to death, Sephira.
Her eyes met his. She looked angry. Don't talk like a fool. All the government planning in the world wouldn't have changed anything. I wish you hadn't written those articles too, Theremin. You know how I felt about them. But what does any of that matter now? You were sincere in what you felt. You were wrong, but you were sincere. And in any case, there's no sense speculating about what might have been. What we have to deal with now is what is.
More gently, she said, enough of this. Are you able to walk? We need to get you back to the sanctuary. A chance to wash up, some fresh clothes, a little food in you.
Food?
The university people left plenty of provisions behind.
Theremin chuckled and pointed to the grobin.
You mean I don't have to eat that?
Not unless you really want to. I suggest you give it to someone who needs it more than you do, while we're on our way out of the forest.
Good idea.
He pulled himself to his feet, slowly and painfully.
Gods, the way everything was hurting. An experimental step or two.
Not bad, not bad. Nothing seemed to be broken, after all. Just a little bit misused.
The thought of a warm bath and actual substantial food was healing his bruised and aching body already.
He took a last look around at his little flung-together lean-to, his stream, his scruffy little bushes and weeds. His home, these strange few days. He wouldn't miss it much, but he doubted that he'd forget his life here very soon either. Then he picked up the grobin and slung it over his shoulder.
Lead the way, he said to Sephira.
They had not gone more than 100 yards when Theremin caught sight of a group of boys skulking behind the trees. They were the same ones, he realized, who had flushed the grobin from its burrow and hunted it to its death. Evidently, they had come back to search for it. Now, sullenly, they were staring from a distance, obviously annoyed that Theremin was walking off with their prize. But they were too intimidated by the green neckerchiefs of office that identified the fire patrol group, or more likely simply by their needle guns, to stake a claim to it.
Hey, Theremin called. This is yours, isn't it? I've been taking care of it for you.
He flung the carcass of the grobin toward them. It fell to the ground, well short of the place where they were, and they hung back, looking mystified and uneasy. They were obviously eager to have the animal, but afraid to come forward.
There's life in the post-nightfall era for you, he said sadly to Sephira. They're starving, but they don't dare make a move. They think it's a trap. They figure that if they step out from those trees to get the animal, we'll shoot them down, just for fun.
Sephira said, who can blame them? Everyone's afraid of everyone now. Leave it there. They'll go after it when we're out of sight.
He followed her onward, limping as he went.
Sephira and the other patrol people moved confidently through the forest, as though invulnerable to the dangers that were lurking everywhere. And, indeed, there were no incidents as the group headed, as rapidly as Theremin's injuries permitted, toward the road that ran through the woods. It was interesting to see, he thought, how quickly society was beginning to reconstitute itself. In just a few days, an irregular outfit like this fire patrol had begun to take on a kind of governmental authority, unless it was just the needle guns and the general air of self-assurance that kept the crazies away, of course. They came to the edge of the forest, finally. The air was growing cooler, and the light was uncomfortably dim, now that Petru and Trey were the only suns in the sky. In the past, Theremin had never been bothered by the relatively low light levels that were typical of the hours when the only illumination came from one of the double-sun pairs. Ever since the eclipse, though, such a two-sun evening had seemed disturbing and threatening to him, a possible harbinger, although he knew it could not be so, of the imminent return of darkness. The psychic wounds of nightfall would be a long time healing, even for the world's sturdiest minds. "The sanctuary is just a little way down this road," Sephara said. "How are you doing?" "I'm all right," said Theremin sourly. "They didn't cripple me, you know." But it was a considerable struggle to force his sore, throbbing legs to carry him along. He was intensely gladdened and relieved when at last he found himself at the cave-like entrance to the underground domain that was the sanctuary. The place was like a maze. Caverns and corridors led off in all directions. Vaguely, in the distance, he saw the intricate loops and coils of scientific-looking gear, mysterious and unfathomable, running along the walls and ceiling. This place, he remembered now, had been the site of the university's atom smasher, until the big new experimental lab at Cerro Heights opened. Apparently, the physicists had left a good deal of obsolete equipment behind. A tall man appeared, radiating authority. Sephara said, "This is Altenol 111. Altenol, I want you to meet Theremin 762. "Of the Chronicle," Altenol said. He didn't sound awed or in any way impressed. He seemed merely to be registering the fact out loud. "Formerly," said Theremin. They eyed each other without warmth. Altenol, Theremin thought, looked to be a very tough cookie indeed. A man in early middle age, obviously trim and in prime condition. He was well-dressed in sturdy clothing and carried himself with the air of someone who was accustomed to being obeyed. Theremin, studying him, riffled quickly through the well-stocked files of his memory, and after a moment was pleased to strike a chord of recognition. He said, "Morthane Industries? That Altenol?" A momentary flicker of amusement, or was it annoyance, appeared in Altenol's eyes. "That one, yes." "They always said you wanted to be prime executive. Well, it looks like you are now. Of what's left of Cerro City, at least, if not the whole Federal Republic." "One thing at a time," Altenol said. His voice was measured. "First we try to stumble back out of anarchy. Then we think about putting the country together again and worry about who's going to be prime executive. We have the problem of the apostles, for example, who have seized control of the entire north side of the city and the territory beyond, and placed it under religious authority. They won't be easy to displace." Altenol smiled coolly. "First things first, my friend." "And for Theremin," Sephara said, "the first thing is a bath, and then a meal. He's been living in the forest since nightfall." "Come with me," she said to him. Partitions had been set up all along the old particle accelerator track, carving it up into a long series of little rooms. Sephara showed him to one in which copper pipes mounted overhead carried water to a porcelain tank. "It won't be really warm," she warned him. "We only run the boilers a couple of hours a day because the fuel supply is so low. But it's bound to be better than bathing in a chilly forest stream." "You knew something about Altenol?"
"Chairman of Morthane Industries, the big shipping combine. He was in the news a year or two back, something about wangling a contract by possibly irregular means to develop a huge real estate tract on government land in Nebro Province."
"What does a shipping combine have to do with real estate development?" Sephara asked.
"That's exactly the point. Nothing at all. He was accused of using improper government influence. Something about offering lifetime passes on his cruise line to senators, I think." Theremin shrugged. "Makes no difference now, really. There's no more Morthane Industries, no more real estate developing to be done, no federal senators to bribe. He probably didn't like my recognizing him."
"He probably didn't care. Running the fire patrol is all that matters to him now."
"For the time being," said Theremin. Today, the Cerro City Fire Patrol. Tomorrow, the world. You heard him talking about displacing the apostles who have grabbed the far side of the city. Well, someone's got to do it, and he's the kind who enjoys running things. Safera went out. Theremin lowered himself into the porcelain tank. Not exactly sybaritic, but pretty wonderful after all he had been through lately. He leaned back and closed his eyes and relaxed, and luxuriated. Safera took him to the sanctuary dining hall, a simple tin-roofed chamber, when he was finished with his bath, and left him there by himself, telling him she had to make her day's report to Altenal. A meal was waiting for him there, one of the package dinners that had been stockpiled here in the months that the sanctuary was being set up. Lukewarm vegetables, tepid meat of some unknown kind, a pale green non-alcoholic drink of nondescript flavor. It all tasted wondrously delicious to Theremin. He forced himself to eat slowly, carefully, knowing that his body was unaccustomed to real food after his time in the forest. Every mouthful had to be thoroughly chewed or he'd get sick, he knew, though his instinct was to bolt it as fast as he could and ask for a second helping. After he had eaten, Theremin sat back, staring dully at the ugly tin wall. He wasn't hungry anymore, and his frame of mind was beginning to change for the worse. Despite the bath, despite the meal, despite the comfort of knowing he was safe in this well-defended sanctuary, he found himself slipping into a mood of the deepest desolation. He felt very weary, and dispirited, and full of gloom. It had been a pretty good world, he thought. Not perfect, far from it, but good enough. Most people had been reasonably happy. Most were prosperous. There was progress being made on all fronts, toward deeper scientific understanding, toward greater economic expansion, toward stronger global cooperation. The concept of war had come to seem quaintly medieval, and the age-old religious bigotries were mostly obsolete, or so it had seemed to him. And now it was all gone, in one short span of hours, in a single burst of horrifying darkness. A new world would be born from the ashes of the old, of course. It was always that way. Safera's excavations at Thombo testified to that. But what sort of world would it be, Theremin wondered. The answer to that was already at hand. It would be a world in which people killed other people for a scrap of meat, or because they had violated a superstition about fire, or simply because killing seemed like a diverting thing to do. A world in which the Altenals came forward to take advantage of the chaos and gain power for themselves. A world in which the Folamans and Mondiors, no doubt, were scheming to emerge as the dictators of thought, probably working hand in hand with the Altenals, Theremin thought morbidly. A world in which... No. He shook his head. What was the point of all this dark, brooding lamentation? Safera had the right notion, he told himself. There was no sense in speculating about what might have been. What we have to deal with is what is. At least he was alive, and his mind was pretty much whole again, and he had come through his ordeal in the forest more or less intact, aside from a few bruises and cuts that would heal in a couple of days. Despair was a useless emotion now. It was a luxury that he couldn't allow himself, any more than Safera would allow herself the luxury of still being angry at him over the newspaper pieces he had written. What was done was done. Now it was time to pick up and move onward, regroup, rebuild, make a fresh start. To look back was folly. To look forward in dismay or despondency was mere cowardice. Finished? Safera said, returning to the dining hall. I know, not magnificent food, but it beats eating graben. I couldn't say. I never actually got to eat any graben. You probably didn't miss much. Come, I'll show you to your room. It was a low-ceilinged cubicle of no great elegance, a bed with a godlight on the floor beside it, a washstand, a single dangling light fixture. Scattered in one corner were some books and newspapers that must have been left behind by those who had occupied this room on the evening of the eclipse. Theremin saw a copy of the Chronicle, open to the page of his column, and winced. It was one of his last pieces, a particularly intemperate onslaught on Aethor and his group. He reddened and pushed it out of sight with his foot. Safera said, What are you going to do now, Theremin?
Do?
I mean, once you've had a chance to rest up a little. I haven't given it much thought. Why? Altenal wants to know if you're planning to join the fire patrol, she said.
Is that an invitation?
He's willing to take you aboard. You're the kind of person that he needs. Someone strong. Someone capable of dealing with people.
Yes, Theremin said. I'd be good here, wouldn't I?
But he's uneasy about one thing. There's room for only one boss in the patrol, and that's Altenahl. If you joined up, he'd want you to understand right from the beginning that what Altenahl says goes, without any argument. He's not sure how good you are at taking orders.
I'm not so sure how good I am at that either, Theremin said. But I can see Altenahl's point of view.
Will you join, then? I know there are problems with the whole patrol setup, but at least it's a Force 4 order, and we need something like that now. And Altenahl may be high-handed, but he's not evil. I'm convinced of that. He simply thinks the times call for strong measures and decisive leadership, which he's capable of supplying.
I don't doubt that he is.
Think it over this evening, Safara said. If you want to join, talk to him tomorrow. Be frank with him. He'll be frank with you. You can be certain of that. So long as you can assure him that you're not going to be any direct threat to his authority, I'm certain that you and he...
No, Theremin said suddenly.
No what?
He was silent for a time. At length, he said, I don't need to spend the evening thinking about it. I already know what my answer will be.
Safara looked at him, waiting.
Theremin said, I don't want to butt heads with Altenahl. I know the kind of man he is, and I'm very sure that I can't get along with people like that for any length of time. And I also know that in the short run it may be necessary to have operations like the fire patrol. But in the long run they're a bad thing. And once they're established and institutionalized, it's very hard to get rid of them. The Altenahls of this world don't give up power voluntarily. Little dictators never do. And I don't want the knowledge that I helped put him on top hanging around my neck for the rest of my life. Reinventing the feudal system doesn't strike me as a useful solution for the problems we have now. So it's no go, Safara. I'm not going to wear Altenahl's green neckerchief. There isn't any future for me here.
Quietly, Safara said, What are you going to do, then?
Sheeran told me that there's a real provisional government being formed at Amgondo Park. University people, maybe some people from the old government, representatives from all over the country coming together down there. As soon as I'm strong enough to travel, I'm going to head for Amgondo.
She regarded him steadily. She made no reply.
Theremin took a deep breath and said after a moment, Come with me to Amgondo Park, Safara. He reached a hand toward her. Softly, he said, Stay with me this evening in this miserable little tiny room of mine. And in the morning, let's clear out of here and go down south together. You don't belong here any more than I do. And we stand 5 times as much chance of getting to Amgondo together than we would if either of us tried to make the journey alone.
Safara remained silent. He did not withdraw his hand.
Well, what do you say?
Theremin watched the play of conflicting emotions moving across her features, but he did not dare try to interpret them.
Clearly, Safara was struggling with herself. But then, abruptly, the struggle came to an end.
Yes, she said at last. Yes. Let's do it, Theremin.
And moved toward him, and took his hand, and switched off the dangling overhead light, though the soft glow of the godlight beside the bed remained.